your favorite film is awful.
Hello, and welcome to Your Favourite Film is Awful, the show where we take your favourite films and defend them against negative reviews. As always, I'm Luke MJ Powell, and with me today is my very special little ginger buddy. His name is Sam. Hello, Sam. How you doing?
Not too bad, thank you. Thank you for informing everyone that I'm little.
Yeah, and ginger. And I love that. That was the... Your big problem is that you're short, not that you're ginger.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's true. I feel like it's more acceptable these days to be ginger.
Well, no thanks to South Park.
Yeah. Sam, why are you here? Why the hell have you darkened my doorsteps?
Well, to bend your ear about aliens.
About aliens? Mm. You wish to tell me you want to talk about aliens from 1986?
That I do.
That's one of your favourite films?
That it is.
Ah! Okay, so for the people at home who haven't watched Aliens, what's it about? Please provide a spoiler-filled synopsis.
Well, I'm glad you asked. So, set 57 years after the events of the first movie, we find our protagonist, Ellen Ripley, adrift in space in hypersleep, shortly after being picked up by a deep space salvage team. She's, like, taken aboard the ship and caught up to speed, you know, the whole, oh shit, you've been asleep for decades, your family's dust. And she learns that the planet where they discovered the xenomorph in the first place, LV-426, has been a colony for the past, like, 20 years. So naturally she starts freaking out, and they don't believe her story about, you know, aliens with acid for blood and her whole crew being eaten.
Does sound pretty far-fetched.
Yeah, in space. But yeah, the main driving force of the plot is that, surprise, surprise, the colony goes dark. So then, you know, a team of colonial marines are sent down with Ripley as their advisor to sort of check out what's going on, and they obviously don't listen. Because otherwise you wouldn't have a film. So I think the best way I could surmise it is I Told You So, the movie.
Fair, okay. And then, you know, shenanigans ensue.
Squishy, acidic shenanigans.
Okay, fair enough, Sam. But I think you... I'm sorry to tell you this. And by sorry, I mean I'm not sorry at all. I'm just going to tell you the bare-faced truth of the matter. And that's that you're fucking wrong... This film is garbage, and the Kia, with a half-star review, sums it up perfectly in this sweet little package of a sentence. Are you ready to hear it? I don't care. I don't care if you're ready to hear it. Here is the sentence.
Right.
Not really a film. Just a load of catchphrases pretending to be a script.
Oh.
Mwah. Perfection. Oh. What do you got to say about that?
I guarantee you it's one of those first-year film students that's like, my favourite movie is Pulp Fiction, I think it's the best thing ever written. I'm not out in Charlie for loving that movie, I love it too, but that's my point.
Oh, how could you bring his name into the dirt like
at,
that?
I'm staring what at a Pulp Fiction poster right now.
I love that your immediate defence is to attack their character.
Yes.
Okay, no, fair. Anything else to defend again? Do you think that it is full of catchphrases? I mean, I can name a couple.
A point I have written down further down here is that it's one of the reasons I find it endearing is that each character in their own right has, like, memorable things they say. Like, someone will say the name and you can associate said quotes with whatever. Like, you know, the whole, it's game over, man. It's game over, that sort
classic,
of thing.
Classic, classic.
That's the sort of thing that sticks with me, so then maybe that's why I like it. But I can very much understand why someone will go, oh, this is all just shit I've heard people shout at me before.
Well, yeah, this review was made in 2020. So, you know, it's had a long time to be out there in pop culture. And so they've probably experienced many of the, it's game over, man, game over. And get away from her, you bitch.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Which I think was a perfect spot on Ripley impression, if I do say so myself.
I mean... I thought I'd just press play on the movie again. I wasn't quite sure.
Well, no. Okay, I feel like you're right in the case that there are catchphrases, but they have what's very popular from the movie that have kind of grown bigger than the film itself. And even though there is kind of a stereotypical nature to it, because the army men are army men, and so they do just say...
army shit.
What's expected of them.
They're very much a product of their time in this film.
Oh, very much. and there are these lovely little lines of dialogue that have become quite popular catchphrases that you could feasibly print on a t-shirt and spend lots of money on.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. I feel like you're in your own right. The Kaya isn't necessarily wrong, but to say it's just that is, I feel like a bit of an exaggeration. I understand what you're going for.
Of course.
I don't agree with what you're going for, but I think I can say it a bit clearer than what you did by just going, fuck you.
Perhaps.
Fuck you and your Pulp Fiction loving ass.
Immediately on the defensive.
Hey, that's fine. That's why you're here. You've got to defend. You're on the defensive. You've got to attack their character or any other way that you feel is necessary to get your point across. But let's see how you go against this one. This is Gabe,
oh,
half star review. It's a slightly longer one as well, so that there may be a bit more meat to chew on. What a dreadful deconstruction of Ridley Scott's incredible sci-fi mystery thriller. James Cameron takes a fantastic concept and Americanizes it into ruin.
Oh.
Ripley returns to the Xenomorphs purely for revenge purposes, deliberately putting people in danger for her own pride. Instead of an interesting, varied cast, as in Alien, the crew in this film is a generic cohort of two-dimensional action men who go out at intervals for no reason other than to get killed at points where the narrative needs a thrust, seemingly only fueled by a death.
I don't think I watched the same movie.
No? You disagree so far?
Okay, I'm going to try and take it in chunks and then we'll get to the bottom half before I forget.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because
I'm not finished, so you interject now.
I feel like they say they go away from the mystery and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because the main draw of Alien was it's the fear of the unknown, right? Because we barely see the Xenomorph throughout the whole thing. I think you only get like a full, almost body shot like right at the end of the movie. You know, when it comes up behind Ripley and then is sucked out the airlock. By that point, like, the mystery's gone, we know that it's this tall alien thing, like we've seen in Stalkers for a whole movie. So then if you try and do that a second time, it's not going to have that air of mystery. You're not going to be worried, like, oh, what is it? We don't understand the extent of what it can do.
Yeah.
So then I suppose making this Aliens a sequel, being like, okay, it's not going to be Fear of the Unknown anymore. Let's make it a bit action and create tension with what they've done here with overwhelming numbers and ill-prepared, some of them being cannon fodder. But like, and the point about it being revenge is like, the reason Ripley is terrified and warning them is because there's a colony full of families there. And she goes down there as an advisor so the Marines don't die.
Mm-hmm.
And then gets sucked up because like, she finds a kid and then like the whole instinct of protect the child kicks in sort of thing. Even though the kid's goofy as hell. That's the point.
What? You don't like the kid? Little Newt?
She's endearing, but like, it mostly come out at night.
Mostly. Yeah, I watched the behind the scenes, and she was hired because she could do like a good American voice. And she
is she not American?
No. I think she's half American.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think it's like her dad's American and her mom's English. But in that film, a lot of her dialogue is purely RP. A
bit wonky.
Mm.
But that's besides the point.
Yes. She's a lovely young lass who did a great job.
Mm. That's unceremoniously bumped off between movies.
Yes. Yeah. Oof. Poor child. Yeah. And to get back to your original point, it is kind of that once the cat is out of the bag, you can't then put the cat back in the bag and expect the same results.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in the behind the scenes, they explain that this is meant to be a sequel, not a reboot or a remake. It's it's that continuation of the story, which I think
you... An expansion.
Exactly, which I think you touched upon by saying that they don't just try and redo the same film again. They expand it and go, hey, more aliens, more action. How do you deal with a bigger threat rather than one alien and people that don't know what they're doing, have people that know what they're doing, and many, many aliens.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about them being described as two-dimensional action men? who go out for no other reason than to die.
To some extent, I sort of agree. Like, I get where you're coming from, but I feel like I touched on it a moment ago. It's a product of its time, and there's a lot of, like, army dude action movies at the time. So these are... well, another point I had is they're very much, like, caricatures or, like, the blueprints for, like, archetypes that we see in a lot of action things. Like, you've got like, a comedic relief character that's Hudson, who says some of the more famous lines of the film. Like, we just got our asses kicked, pal. That stuff.
Yeah, that type of stuff.
And you've got your slightly more reserved and like, collected Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
And the first example of the, like, slimy corporate money-grubby dude that I remember seeing.
Oh, yeah.
Which we've seen countless films since.
Yes.
And they're, like, a strong, like, leading character with a clear moral purpose. But, obviously, the person that has the most depth is Ripley. Because we're with Ripley for whether you want to count it, like, all the way through to Resurrections, if you want to not get into semantics about that.
Oh, okay. Well, I can honestly say I've not watched it recently, so I could tell you nothing that happens in the third or fourth film. Although I do have recollection of cloning being a thing. Is that in the fourth?
Resurrections.
In Resurrection, yes. Mm-hmm.
Ripley plays basketball, gets Ron Perlman.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's shit. I forgot about that.
Incentive enough to rewatch it.
You know, after this, I may just.
Mm.
Okay, let's return to Gabe. What does Gabe have to say about this? Ah, well, this is an interesting line to come back on. There is no point to this movie other than a cash grab. It was boring, and the characters were uncompelling. If you want a good film to watch, watch Alien. If you loved Alien and want something good to watch after it, watch Alien. Or move on to a different franchise. This film sucks.
Right.
Yeah. Gabe holds no prisoners.
Mate, I don't even know where to begin.
So we've got cash grab, boring, characters uncompelling. If you want to watch a good Alien movie, watch Alien and then watch Alien again.
I agree with if you like Alien, watch it again, because it's a banger.
It is a banger.
It's not good. Well, I just see it as a more, like we said already, an expansion of the formula, because you don't want to do the same thing again. And I feel like, ultimately, the point is for it to just be fun, because it's an action movie, more so than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I think I described it in my notes as just, it is a cheesy action movie with horror undertones. Or like set in a sci-fi horror theme, because, like you said, the cat's out of the bag. We know what's happening. The joy in it comes from Ripley knowing and the Marines not having a clue and ignoring her.
Mm.
But that's where I derive the fun from it.
Yeah, I think even still you have some elements of horror, like when they're trapped in the laboratory, in the little like hospital med bay, and the two facehuggers are in there.
Yeah.
Or when Newt is in the water and the alien like comes up like fucking Freddy Krueger and is like, hey, I'm gonna fucking kill you now.
It's also the clearest shot we get of a whole xenomorph until Ripley goes into the hive near the end.
Yeah. Until the climax where they're all over the joints.
But then, even then you get, like, we didn't get to see a hive in the first one or how they, like, all the saliva that comes out of the mouth creates the cocoons or, like, the queen laying eggs. We've got to see how the eggs come about, like, I think what I fanboy about a lot when it comes to Alien, and as you've heard me talk about Predator, when they go into, like, why they are the way they are, because it just makes it feel a little bit more genuine, despite the fact that they're big, shiny aliens from space.
Yeah, it is really good world-building of... And as you just touched on, in the first film, all we see is a derelict spaceship, some facehugger eggs... One alien.
Well, we see the dead space jockey.
Oh, yes, and the space jockey. Yeah.
What it is for another, like, 30 years.
Yeah, that's very true, because they do not touch upon the space jockey in this film.
No.
They ignore
it. It's barely mentioned in the H.R. Giger book.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, there's a drawing of it, there's a little blurb, and it's like, here's its deal, but I don't know what it is.
Here's this cool design I did. Thumbs up.
Don't worry about it.
That's fair. That's very fair. Sometimes a cool design just needs to look cool.
And it was exactly that for most of my life.
fair. No, I agree with this. I understand this. I don't agree with this. That's wrong. You're bad. I'm going to tell you a review from the Times. So this is from, well, these are little extracts from Gene Siskel, gave the film a negative review, describing Aliens as one extremely violent, protracted attack on the senses. And that towards the end, the film resorts to placing a young girl in jeopardy in a pathetic attempt to pander to who knows what audiences. Some people have praised the technical excellence of Aliens. Well, the Eiffel Tower is technically impressive, but I wouldn't want to watch it fall apart on people for 2 hours.
Well, that just boils down to it's not your cup of tea, didn't it?
You're not wrong. That is a quick way to defend, I guess. Just means
different,
you didn't like it, eh?
Different folks. Yeah, I don't know how to expand on that much more. It's like, obviously, a sci-fi horror action movie with, like, strong tones of, like, body horror is not going to be everybody's cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
With much like the first one, I think a lot of people didn't like a dude's chest bursting open while they're trying to eat breakfast. Yeah, you're not going to please anybody, everybody with everything, are you?
That's very true. And I feel like this one, even though there's more to look at, I don't think it is quite as, like, visually viscous as that original chest burster scene. Because that one's like explosion of blood, a fountain of red agony over everybody. But this one, it's just like a punch. Yeah. It's like, here's one explosion, one blood pack, and then a little alien hand puppet going, rat. Well, no, a little electronic, being like, hey, how you doing?
One little thing about that chest burster, it's way longer.
Yeah.
In the first movie. When I was rewatching it today, I was like, what the fuck? What? He's like all the way out.
He's just chilling. He's like, yo, what up?
Hey, guys.
Also, got a note. This is the film where they really bring in the arms of the little chest bursters.
Oh, yeah. Again, his arms, they're quite active.
Oh, yeah. He pops out. He's just wheeling about. He's like, yo, I'm here. Hey, how's it going? Nice to meet you. And then the Marines are like, no, fuck off. Burn.
The chest burster in Aliens reminds me more so of the chestburster from the end of Spaceballs than the chestburster from Alien, which is the one they're taking the piss out of. Because it's little, hello, my honey, long
hello,
arms.
Hello, my darling. Fair. I feel like this is a good time to really hone in on some people have praised the technical excellence of Aliens. To which I want to say, do you think it's technically excellent?
I think it's aged very, very well. It's like the reason I love Aliens, or one of the reasons I love Aliens so much alongside The Thing, is that the devotion to it being as largely practical effects as possible. So like you said about the animatronic chest burster coming out, and like it very clearly being like a dude in a suit a lot of the time, or like, but you know, the layers of their faces pulling up as the little mouths come out and the saliva dripping down, it just makes it a lot more visceral. And, like, disgusting to look at. It's not meant to be a comfort. And it's like the problem, I think, with... Okay, one of the problems with Covenant and Prometheus is that they're all a bit shiny and gooey, but in that smooth Henry Cavill top lip look.
Yeah, a little bit more digitally enhanced.
There's, like, a layer of disconnect. It's like, when I go back to watching The Thing more than I probably should... It makes me so uncomfortable every time because it's just... I know, it's a very obviously, like, effect and you can see it because it's old. But, like, it's gross because there's just an attempt to make it look so real.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, with Aliens, you can very much believe that someone has been dedicated to trying to make you as uncomfortable as possible by this seemingly eyeless creature with just a mouth. And then a tiny little baby mouth coming to ruin your day.
Yeah. Again, falling back on what I just said, because I did watch the behind the scenes not 3 hours ago. Just how much they did of the practical effects and getting as much as they could in camera. So cool. So impressive. Like, the outdoor shots, they had miniatures. They had the car that they drive around, the little vroom vroom. They had, like, the big version that was built off of what they used to haul around planes. They had a little RC version and then a tiny, tiny little version that they could roll around and put inside the jet. So everything is as practical as they could make it. And it's just very aesthetically pleasing because these are the things that in another 20 years, we're going to be looking at the CGI and the 3D effects that we have in current movies and go, oh yeah, that's too shiny. That's too uncanny valley. But because it's been made practically, even when we look at it and go, okay, it's not super believable, but we can also look at it and go, it's nearly 40 years old, and I couldn't tell you which technique they used for which shot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that leans on it aging well, comparatively speaking.
And also, I feel like that blends in with the big fight at the end. The Alien Queen and Power Loader.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is... They built a suit with a guy standing behind Sigourney Weaver. And then they did a load of puppetry and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Alien Queen is there, like, being used two puppeteers and a crane holding that shit up. It's just so cool.
Well, yeah, it's like how they did the early... Well, all of the Chucky movies and the TV show was, like, the crazy animatronics combined with puppeteers following them around.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Aliens makes it look a lot more convincing because you can get away with a giant, darkly lit xenomorph queen a lot easier, but, like, it just goes to show, like, a level of care that I think is why so many people appreciate these movies generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I showed the movie to my younger brother, who probably is too young to watch it. So he was older than me when I first saw it. And he was going on about how cool, like, it all looked.
Mm.
And then I did have to make the joke when a xenomorph popped up, and I was like, hey, look, it's the guy from Fortnite.
No, what has modern gaming done to cult classic movies?
It's given them a new lease of life.
It has.
Okay, so, like, my dad showing it to me, and then me showing it to my younger brother, and the through thread being that, wow, this looks really cool for how the movie's getting on in age. It's just...
100%, just, yeah.
Quality of life.
I think, yeah, you mentioned it as well with The Thing, because they did The Thing, and then they did a The Thing prequel?
2011. It's a prequel.
Yeah. But, of course, they didn't change the name because fuck audience members, I guess.
Yeah.
But that one...
That's another trope that does my head in, yeah.
Yeah, that's so dumb. But that one, they released it... No, they filmed it with practical effects and then went over and digitalized the effects after the fact.
Mm.
And it just aged it completely to the point where even now... If I were to look for The Thing, I'm just going to get The Thing John Carpenter. I'm not going to get The Thing prequel on my web search.
I feel like the only good things I have to say about that movie is, oh, look, it's the axe that MacReady pulls out of the wall. That's it.
Oh, okay. So
and then I'm like, hey, I watched the good one.
Deary me, oh dear. Okay, are you ready for yet another review?
Yes, please.
Well, you'll be surprised to hear that this is another half-star review. I know, it's because the film is that bad. I had plenty to pick from. But this one is from Jess Halley. And it begins quite simply. And I think she may have a point here. No one should have allowed James Cameron near the franchise. He pummeled the subtlety of the first's horror and mystery with horrible action and inconsistencies. The aliens become an annoying inconvenience instead of the sinister and brooding creatures of the first film.
I think in the first movie it was quite inconvenient to have a giant alien on board.
That is a pretty big inconvenience. You are absolutely right there.
I have to give
death.
Some
death
to...
is quite annoying as well.
It just really gets in the way, doesn't it?
Really stops me doing what I want to do.
I think I've got to give. I understand the point they're trying to make.
Mm.
I don't agree with the way they've said it because, like, yeah, we've talked about how, like, it's now like the fear of how many there are and like this infestation. That even these highly trained, in air quotes, Marines can't handle it. But the scene when they're welding themselves in the room
Yeah, the little command center.
And then Hudson's freaking out at the motion tracker, and they're getting closer and closer. But that shows, like, they're smarter than they're given credit for. So it's like, yeah, they've just seen that everything's locked and gone through the roof. So it's like, they're still menacing in the fact that they're intelligent.
Mm.
The just tension, I guess, is diminished somewhat because you know there's going to be a lot of them. And you know they're coming because they're more equipped. They've got, like, the ability to gather the information, I suppose, with the motion detector. But they're smart enough to know that they need people alive so they can make more of themselves.
Mm.
And that freaks me out a little bit. It's when Ripley's screaming, "They don't kill you, they don't kill you." I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, that's almost worse.
Yeah.
They don't kill you, they impregnate you to die.
Mm.
Oh dear.
Fun for the whole family. Just not yours.
No. Fun for their family.
Yes.
Yeah, I will say that is like an extra caveat of terror.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the first film, it's just, oh, the alien got you, you're dead, game over, never mind.
Mm.
But in this one, it's, oh no, you got. Now you're going to be taken to a little hive where you might wake up. And when you wake up, Facehugger's going to grab you. And then if that falls off and you regain consciousness again, guess what pleasures you get to enjoy?
You get to be awake for the best part.
Yeah, when your fucking chest bursts.
The miracle of life.
Ha, da, da. I don't know what that was, but I loved it.
I get the point they're trying to make. I'd also say...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's... Again, the expansion. I did find a common theme amongst the negative reviews that is... we dislike it because it's not the first again.
Yep. But if it was the first again, we'll dislike it.
Oh, 100%. Mm. We'll hate it more if it's just the first again.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, I'm not sure if to say this now or after the last review, but to say that James Cameron shouldn't have been allowed near the franchise, I think is a ridiculous notion because he is so good at directing this film.
Mm.
Like, there are so many, again... To go back to what I was just saying about the shots and what he does with the camera and how he has it all lined up and visioned and... So, to go back to the alien versus the power loader. Is it power loader? I'm going to call it a power loader.
Yeah, I think that's
the hole in the floor. That's been established from, like, early middle of the film. That there's doors on the floor, they open up, there's a big hole. Great. There's no hole there. That was just a corridor. They just stuck the alien and the power loader against the wall and had Ripley climb up a ladder just on her hands and knees as she would crawl around on the floor. And it was in this behind the scenes shot where there was just a guy stood next to her and I was like, how the fuck are you just standing on the wall? What? How have you fooled me like that?
Whoa.
I thought this was an actual elevator shaft, but she's just chilling.
If I'm remembering the scene you're telling me about correctly, that's the airlock part, right?
Yes.
That's the point you have to say about the airlock. I love this movie with all of my heart, but the only part that irks me about it is that Ripley keeps her arm when she opens the airlock.
Why would she not keep her arm?
She's been sucked into the vacuum of space. Would she not just go...
Oh, right, yeah. Well, again, you kind of touched on it earlier. There wouldn't be a film if she just died.
Well, it's the end of the movie. They wouldn't have two more, though. Shit.
Ooh, sick burn, I guess, on two films that I barely remember.
Sick burn on films that people universally pan.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Right, we are flying through these. I'm not sure about how well you're defending them, but I feel like you're more going, I agree, but shut up. I think that's your defense at the moment. So, we're going to go into Lil Kill Pappy. It's a 2 out of 10, which equates to a 1-star review, potentially the nicest review of the day.
Mm.
It's a bit of a long one. Feel free to interject if you so desire. James Cameron wrote a... script, and it shows as this film gets cheesier and cheesier as the years go by, and Alien gets better and better as the years go by. Some of the acting was absolutely horrible, and the story was uninteresting and lacked emotion. Now, your eyes widened there. Do you have anything to say about those points?
I'm trying to let it sink in. I think when I described the movie as cheesy earlier, like, it's because it's an 80s action movie. And with our 2020 or 2023 eyeballs, cinema's changed a lot since then, hasn't it? Like, it has to, otherwise no one would care about it. But, like, yeah, you look back on anything, like, some of my favourite games of all time, I'll go back and I'll play Silent Hill 2 or Resident Evil 2, and I'm like, yeah, these are weird. They're not what I'm used to now with my modern gaming sensibilities, but, like, you love them for what they are and what they were at the time. Not everything ages like fine wine. So I can understand where they're coming from.
Yeah. I can understand that. There is a leniency that you should give older films because they didn't have the techniques nor the audience that we have today. Mm-hmm. Especially with today's audiences that kind of demand faster pace and they want a longer act two, shorter. They want to get into the action. They want to see the action. They want to enjoy the action. And they want
to
fuck off.
Yeah. With aliens, don't we have, like, 20 to 30 minutes before things start kicking off, because there's a lot of setup and that slow, I guess, slow build to the tension that we know is coming.
I think that the acting was absolutely horrible. Maybe a bit uncalled for.
A bit harsh. I feel like Sigourney Weaver was fantastic. I think some of the Marines are a little bit cheesy. I've said it a bunch of times now. It's like, I feel like it's maybe semi-intentional, you know, because they've got a lot of quips and one-liners, like when Hudson's like, "Hey Vasquez, you've ever been mistaken for a man?" And she's like, "No, have you?" It's like, yeah, the whole classroom, like, oh! But yeah, I feel like with any movie, you're going to get some less than stellar performances and some that outshine the rest and make them look bad, even if they weren't. Yeah. I guess that'll...
I think especially preference. With this type of, it's quite a sizable cast of, granted, not fully realized characters. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it does just enough for some of them to elevate themselves above just cannon fodder.
Mm.
Like, again, we've mentioned him a couple times, Bill Paxton's Hudson. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows that guy. It's like, yeah, that's good. But in the film, he's not even, like, the main soldier running around.
In the movie, he kind of sucks.
He's kind of a bit shit.
Because everybody that I speak to that hasn't seen the movie in a long time thinks that he's Hicks.
Yeah.
And that happens, I think Gorman says it in, like, the briefing scene.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm Hudson, sir. That's Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it couldn't have been self-aware because I didn't realize people years down the line would be getting them mixed up. But even I do it. I was talking to Ellie the other day when we were watching it, and I was like, oh yeah, when Hicks says this, and I was like, no. No, it's not him, it's Hudson.
Yeah, no. And that, I think, is also something, because Hicks is the main Marine, kind of hinted at love interest, and by hinted at, I mean quite explicitly, is like, hey, I'm gonna be your man after this, but you're not gonna see me in the next movie. And I feel like he does nothing in this film.
He's a yes man with a gun.
Yeah. He exists. He gives Ripley a watch that Ripley immediately re-gifts. And then is just the good-looking fella at the end of the film.
Yeah. Well, he gives Ripley the tracker and he's like, doesn't mean we're engaged or anything.
Yeah. And it's like, this is the first time I feel like you two are talking. Why are you saying... I feel like you shared the plane ride down to the surface where he looked at each other. Yeah, they had a look at each other, and then he went to sleep. And that's all the romance you need. Very of the times.
Ripley wanted someone to agree with her. He did.
Boom.
He's in. There we go.
He's in. He's in there. And now they have a kid, and oh no, they're both dead.
They've adopted
a little mute
baby.
A mostly baby.
And then they are axed off screen. But I believe there is a comic book that retcons their deaths.
Oh?
And Hicks has got, like, a badass eye patch, and Newt is, like, grown up.
Oh.
But I'd have to dig it up. Like, it's in a drawer somewhere.
Ah, so that's not going getting that's not getting recorded on this podcast, but I might find out about later.
Somebody Google it.
Oh, somebody. There's your homework.
I remember it being cool.
Lil Kilpappy goes on to say, "I won't deny that this was a fun action ride, but it doesn't even come close to Ridley Scott's film, and is not part of the franchise in my opinion. I own the quadrilogy, and have watched these films probably like 50 times in my lifetime, and it's funny how my first impressions of them have changed so much, and how the really good stuff just got better. But the hidden crap under James Cameron's film just started leaking out over time."
Unfortunately, opinions can't dispute fact. It is part of the series. I get, you know, not wanting it to be, as much as I wish Resident Evil 6 wasn't part of the series. It is.
Yeah. And Rise of Skywalker for them Star Wars peeps.
But yeah, I feel like what I find quite interesting about discussing this film, like especially with our friends, is that they're different movies for different people. Mm-hmm. Like, Charlie and I have had many conversations where we've sat down, purposely spaced out these conversations so we can re-rank the movies.
Of course.
And we often fluctuate between do we love Alien or Aliens more? And it, I guess it's maybe for us because like we absolutely love them to bits. It's like a flavour of the week thing. Like, I want my Aliens to have a bit of action and cheese right now, so I'm going for Aliens. Or I want the suspense and the feeling of isolation from the first movie. So we want that. So I feel like the differences in the movies give them a wider range. And maybe, you know, your first introduction was Aliens and you think, oh, I like that this one's a bit more creepy when you go watch the first one, or you're offended by the difference. But I feel like it lends itself to variety. And evident, oh, apparently that is the spice of life. So
that is the spice of life.
After that.
Would have given it a higher score as an entertaining action film. But since it's the sequel to a fantastic art film, and it lacks any art on any level, it completely fails.
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Completely fails.
As much as I am horrifically offended by that last part, it is the only review that gave it an actual compliment.
Yeah, well, it was the highest review that I that
by
I
half a star.
By half a star, you know.
I like it's definitely there's a lot of art that went into making that film, as we've discussed, the practical effects, like the scenes in the lab, you know, the facehugger wakes up and like how much it looks convincingly like a little creature that's not being puppeteered or controlled in any way, I swear. And the sound design, which we both know, like I'm a big nerd for. Aliens was the reason I went to university to study it.
Oh shit, like, for sound design.
Yeah, I went there for music production and sound design because of largely the sound design from Aliens, but also the music from Alien. Like, it's so simple but so effective. I am hard pressed to think of sounds that stuck with me, other than like, you know, everyone's like, oh yeah, the lightsabers are great. From Star Wars, or like the sounds of like the blasters and stuff, but like the motion tracker noise from Aliens that we, I think the timestamp that I made sure to note of was 45 minutes into the film. You're walking down a hallway and you've got the motion tracker going, and it's just like the ominous and suspenseful like pulsating beeps coming off it, almost like reverberating. And then, like, you hear the sound of the pulse rifle. And it's, like, unlike any weapon I've heard in any video game or film ever. Like, it's instantly recognisable. And you're, like, how fascinating would it be to be able to create something as unique as that? As memorable as that? Like, I guess, like, sound design's not everybody's cup of tea. So people might not even think to give it merit. Same with music. Like, everybody's got a... they're keyed in for something different. But to say there's no art in that movie at all is just cruel to everybody that poured their hearts into making that film.
It is. It's a little bit harsh, I'd say. It's a little bit harsh. To go into what you were just saying about the sound design, I found it fascinating how little time they had for sound design.
diamonds are made under pressure.
They are.
I think that worked to their benefit, because all of the really memorable sounds from it are quite simplistic.
Mm.
You know, like the pulse rifles, there's obviously some pitch shifting in there. And it's just a very simple sort of reverberated bleep that's that motion tracker. But I think you spend too much time on something, you're going to overcomplicate it, right? Like, if you're writing a script and you read it over and over and over and you've changed it like 1,000 times to the point where it's not at all what you started with. So, maybe it's one of those twists of fate that ended up being the best thing for it.
Yeah, I can see that. It was just so interesting to me that, like, the guy that came in to, like, burn the score and make it all the thing, he gave himself 6 weeks to do it.
Mm.
And for the first 3 weeks, they were still filming. Oh. Not editing. They were still, like, filming and changing shots all the way. So he was trying to, like, get everything to be within 1/100th of a second so it all matches on the screen. And, like, the day of, he was still doing it, to the point where when they released... when they did, like, the big opening thing with the live orchestra, there were, like, pages of, here's the music... You're just going to have to follow my lead on when you're going to make those sounds, because I've still not nailed it down 100% yet.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, no, the studio wants it out on this date. It's going out on that date. Good luck.
So it is as much a performance for a post-production team as it is the actors.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that. That was quite interesting.
Ah, well, I've educated the defender.
Mm.
Okay, well, Sam, we've kind of sped through that. I feel like you now need to justify yourself. You need to... Anybody that's listened to this entire podcast, using their free will to listen to a podcast about a film they've not watched, I feel now is the optimum time for you to, you know, do a final defense, a final huzzah of why anyone should watch this awful film.
Don't.
Oh, okay. That was short and sweet.
I think the best way I could tell someone to watch it is, it's just at this point where we are now with how we look back on movies of that time, I think it's a fun, lovingly crafted action film. It's got its strong horror themes, but it's not like gonna traumatize someone too much. Like, comparing it to the first one, it's not nowhere near as scary, even if you're unaware of the xenomorph. Like, it's like instantly memorable characters, despite them not being as deep as you'd expect. Like Bruce mentioned earlier, it's easy to follow. It's just a good bit of fun. It's like it's 2 hours and 20 minutes long, which is, it's longer than, you know, the typical 90 minutes that people settle down for. But
well, the typical 90 minutes people used to sit down for.
Oh, God, yeah. I'd been repressing the MCU, thanks, mate. But yeah, that extra little bit of runtime, I think, is used to great effect, which helps the rest of the movie land the way it needs to. And aliens are cool.
Aliens are cool.
Sorry, xenomorphs.
Yes, got to give them their proper title.
Mm.
So... I will now pull off my mask and reveal myself. In the black and white scale of awesome and awful, it's an awesome little movie, isn't it? It's a good time.
Yes!
It is. I can't complain too much. I mean, I can if I so desire, but it is great. It was a little bit of a challenge, to be honest with you. I'll give you a peek behind the curtain. A lot of people had the same issues, which meant finding reviews a bit more tricky than usual of... Hey, let's have a bit of variety of these problems. No, we all have the same problem.
Yeah.
But it's such a weird problem because it's... The very taglines kind of explain what the film is going to be. The tagline for Alien, like, in space, no one can hear you scream. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. It's a perfect, hey, this is a horror. These people are going to get fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Alien's tagline is, this time it's war.
Mm-hmm.
These, just the taglines, if you looked at the very poster, you'd be like, okay, this is going to be a different ride.
Yeah.
And it is. Very much so.
Yeah.
I have partaken in these conversations with yourself and Charlie, and my opinion will remain, in fact, in stone for long as I live and breathe, most likely, potentially. And that is, Alien is better, because I like the claustrophobic nature of one alien fucking murdering everybody.
Yeah.
As opposed to the fun, good times that are participated in Aliens. By me, the audience member. The people in it are not having a good time, and that's very unfortunate for them. But great
Jonesy's
for
Jonesy's having a good time, because he's on the ship. Jonesy's having a good time, because he's just on the ship the entire time.
No, Jonesy's Jonesy's at home.
Yeah,
Jonesy's still
off.
On the fucking... Back on Earth, just chilling.
He's just chilling.
I wonder what he's... Also, surely... I assume Jonesy never comes back, because many, many hundred years pass when they go into stasis.
Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah, he's gotta be dead. Like, that's not even sad, that's just fact. Sorry?
Maybe he's like, there's an unreleased movie or unfinished script somewhere where it's like, Jonesy's off doing his own thing, he's like the $6 million cat and he's been remade into like a robot.
He does a little adventure, gets into a shit ton of debt, gets into cryostasis, waits for Ripley to return to help settle these debts.
This is some Rick Rollin hijinks in space. It's just Cowboy Bebop with
Jonesy. Cowboy Bebop, but with Jonesy the cat.
I'd watch it.
What else was really good? I really liked Bishop, the android. I feel like Bishop was... And especially in scenes with Hudson, when they do the knife trick. Do you know about the knife trick?
What, that it wasn't originally meant to have Hudson's hand on it? Because the scream is genuine.
The scream's genuine. He's genuinely like, what the fuck are you doing? Get off me.
It's one of those points I like to bring up alongside like the Die Hard Alan Rickman falling out the window bit. Or how in the original Alien, I think most of the cast members during the chestburster scene were supposedly not informed of it. So, and like, I think one woman needed therapy, which is fair enough.
That's very fair. That is very fair. I think one of my favourite of that variety is... a film that we've already done on the podcast, which is Seven, which is when the quote-unquote corpse of Sloth was a real guy, and all the police detectives and everything didn't know that that real guy was going to move. And so they go in, they get real close, they give him a poke, and then he starts coughing and they all shit themselves because they weren't aware he was going to move.
Oh, I really hope that's
They thought
true.
It was a dummy.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I really hope that's true.
Yeah. As far as I'm aware, I think that's what the behind the scenes say. But I love that. Love tricking the audience. Oh, another little tidbit that's fun is the actress that's playing Newt. I believe her name is Carrie Henn. So the little girl. Of course, she and Sigourney Weaver spent a lot of time together. They had to get her acclimatized to the aliens so she'd give the scared performances but not be traumatized afterwards. So all through the film, they're being very gentle with her, but they're still like trying to get a little jump scare here and there. But because she now is acclimatized to everything, she's like, ah, you can't scare me, Dave. I know it's just you in the costume. Fuck off. At the premiere, she, of course, wasn't there for the filming when the facehugger in the jar hit the glass. And so apparently she saw that, shat herself. And then James Cameron, who was sat behind her, reached over and put his hand on her shoulder.
She
shat herself again. And then she's like, hey, we got you this time, little...
Bless her. That's fantastic.
Which I just love. It's like, we've been trying to jump scare this little kid this entire time to no effect. But a little puppeteered hand in a jar got
when
her.
When she thought she was safe.
When she thought she was safe. This time it's war.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Right. I think we're done here. Does that sound about right? We've done it all? We've done it all?
Yeah, that's all from me.
That's excellent. So, if you want to hear more from Your Favourite Film is Awful, of course, subscribe to whatever listening device you're doing. Otherwise, we're on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram as Your Favourite Film is Awful or Fav Film is Awful, respectively. But otherwise, have a lovely day. Goodbye.
Thank you for having me.
Say goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
It's game over, man.
You should have warned me.
Right, bye-bye.